The campfire is at this point more than 70,000 acres. Daylight has told some of the story of the wildfire's tear southwestward across Butte County. That's all just happened in the last 24 hours. On Insight, we're monitoring press conferences by officials and more from the California Office of Emergency Services. Also, we're standing by for reports from CAP Radio's Bob Moffett, who is en route to the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds in Chico. We're waiting for an update from CAL FIRE. Besides the campfire in Northern California, there are firefights in Southern California, too. Near the end of the hour, Dr. Tilman Ruff will join us. He's the co-founder of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. We're online and on air with resources and information for you at capradio.org. I'm Beth Ruyak. There's a lot coming up today on Insight. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. The campfire in Butte County has now ripped across more than 70,000 acres, with a reported thousands of structures having been burned. A note for you that the Butte County website has been down. Many phone lines are down. You're actually being encouraged by officials to use social media to continue emergency or urgent conversation and communication in the area. We're going to get to as many updates in this hour as we can. Standing by is CAL FIRE Deputy Chief Mike Moeller. Chief Moeller, as always, thanks so much for making time for us today.
Good morning, Beth. And unfortunately, here we are again talking about large, devastating wildfires.
What is the story at the moment, now that you have some daylight to assess what's going on and what has happened with the campfire?
Well, right now, just statewide, we have over 6,000 firefighters on the lines already, with six fires, the camp being the most devastating so far. Overnight, we had some relief in the wind throughout the area, but still very active. We're at 70,000 acres, 5% containment. Really, our tactics and strategy right now are obviously life and property to get in there and up that containment. But again, the destruction through the town of Paradise is still, we're in the survey mode.
And Chief, we're hearing that the fire is pushing to the eastern edge of Chico. What's the situation around that very urban area?
Well, we've asked, again, citizens to be very cognizant. If you're asked to evacuate, please do so early. We've focused a lot of resources into that area. What I can tell you is the lift of the wind, that wind we saw overnight, has really benefited firefighters. But again, that's our primary concern, is to keep it out of that urban area of Chico, working with Chico City Fire.
Obviously, the firefight makes all the difference in saving lives and structures, but ultimately, is this the kind of fire, and are we in this area when it's going to be up to Mother Nature to really stop it because of, like you said last night, a shift in conditions?
No, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, the conditions here, we are, you know, in the fall months, but we had that very significant red flag warning. The area where the ignition was and it came down through that canyon, we were really the first 12 hours of the firefight evacuating people and trying to get the public out of harm's way. But really, wind-driven fire, what we can do is flank the fire, but we cannot stop the head of the fire. It would be like standing in front of a hurricane. Mother Nature plays a major role.
What are your statistics on structures lost? I'm not hearing, Chief, any lives lost at this point, though I know there are a number of injuries.
The number of injuries, we're cautiously optimistic. Again, we haven't had the time to go back. We're still in an active firefight. Again, life, property, priority right now. As far as structures, we've brought in what we call our damage assessment teams. They're already engaged. We know there's significant structure damage, do not have a number. And as far as any type of injury or life loss, we're still in the mode of searching and rescuing.
Chief, can you just tell me a bit about this area and fire prevention? Is this an area where there had been inspections or a look at the width of roads or the clearance around homes? How active had you been in this area?
Well, I can tell you, Butte County, along with their county board of supervisors, CAL FIRE, unfortunately, those communities, as we saw in the 07 lightning sieges, and just that area is not foreign to wildfire. They're very exercised in prevention with the fire safe councils and clearance. And this is, unfortunately, an area that it can be susceptible to fire. When we see conditions like we saw yesterday morning with that fire, Even if you had that clearance, there's just some things that you can't prevent. I think the communities were prepared, but again, this fire moves so quickly, as we've seen at the beginning of the year this year and last year. We're just seeing conditions that we don't call the new normal. They're normal now, explosive fire growth. But, you know, we think through prevention and education, hopefully people knew that red flag was there and to be prepared.
Chief, are you saying that in the time that we're in, even with the best prevention that agencies could muster at this point, this is a fire that was unstoppable in what it did?
I would say with what we're seeing, yes, with the fire conditions, what we call the alignment of the wind through that canyon, this fire with the push of Mother Nature really was a force to be reckoned with, and it was something that we couldn't have stopped at the early stages. Now we're getting the opportunity without the wind to do it, but the conditions were, again, and I hate to use the term, but it was a perfect storm.
Can you give me a quick update on the firefight in Southern California?
Absolutely. So right now, the two major fires in Southern California, we have the Hill Fire. That's over 6,000 acres, 0% contained. We have the Woolsey Fire, which right now is pushing towards the community of Malibu that's under evacuation. That's over 8,000 acres, 0% contained. Our concern right now is we're going to see that red flag and those offshore winds, unfortunately, return to the Southern California area. CAL FIRE, along with our local and federal partners, have also moved resources to assist that end of the state also.
All right, Chief Mueller, thank you so much for your time. We will be checking back in with you.
Thank you again.
Good luck on the fire lines, too. Thanks.
Thank you.
Now I believe Cap Radio's Bob Moffitt is standing by on the phone.
Yeah,
and
fine. Did you just get her?
Hey, Bob, it's Beth in Sacramento.
Hey.
Hi there. Can you tell me where you are, what's going on around you?
I'm at headquarters. The morning briefing ended a little while ago. You heard most of the details just a couple minutes ago in your conversation there. Right now, dozers are moving in, driving up 99 through from Yuba City into Chico. There were a dozen fire engines parked alongside of the road near Durham. The fire had come up to Highway 99, and so everything east of 99 from that Durham off-ramp all the way into Chico is scorched to the right, but that the Highway 99 provided a nice fire break, at least in this area. It would have been nice if there had been something similar up in Paradise yesterday. But right now, just activity of people trying to find their units, trying to find where they're supposed to go, bulldozers pulling in, water tenders, there are semis on the road that have been coming up that I was driving up with that are bringing in supplies. It's just activity trying to get people where they need to be.
So, Bob, you said in the briefing they talked about a handful of factors that are really critical for right now and in relation to the campfire, one being trees, but another being traffic.
Well, yeah, just because of all the vehicles that I just described are all coming in. There are engines that have been in there. Fire crews have been in there since yesterday morning. They're now starting to be relieved. Visibility. I mean, we're in Chico, which is, I'm guessing, probably maybe 20 miles, maybe less, west of Paradise, a straight shot. And visibility here it stinks. So, I mean, it's, in the middle of all that, with all the smoke and everything and the, no wind to speak of, visibility is definitely a factor.
All right, Bob, I'm going to ask you to report back into us any changes that happen around you. And thank you very much for your report. We're going to jump over to Mark Albert, who is the Morning Edition host and a reporter in Chico for North State Public Radio. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
So what can you add about the picture and about evacuations that might be rolling now as the fire progresses?
Well, we just received word that they are officially lifting the evacuations and repopulating the tiny slice of Chico that was ordered evacuated in less than 2 hours' time. That's at 11 a.m. They're going to start to repopulate populate. I was just out on the road less than half an hour ago, beyond the roadblocks up Highway 32, which is slightly north of Paradise. It sort of follows the next ridge north, and I, you know, it's just difficult to describe in words. There is a black pall over the valley, and as you head into the foothills, it's like the darkest Midwestern thunderstorm you've ever seen. There's smoke hanging maybe 75 feet of elevation above the ground, and once you start heading up the hill, the visibility just completely stops. In parts of Chico itself, the air quality remains, pretty okay until this morning, but a lot of people spent the night wondering whether they needed to flee, and certainly there's quite a bit of unease after what happened in Santa Rosa just a year ago, where people went to bed with the fire 10 miles away, which the fire's about 8 miles from Chico right now, and woke up in the midst of an inferno. And many people didn't get out. So people are very concerned. Driving around, there are firefighters staged all over the place. There are emergency units. There are bulldozers in position should the fires get closer. And just to describe a little bit of the geography, in the valley, there is a lot of dead grass, and that is creating a lot of very great visual images for television. And causing quite a bit of concern, as that video has shown. There are some backfires lit to protect, to get rid of some of that dry grass before the fire could light that up. I suppose the main concern is the fire reaching into the orchard country to the east of town and to the south of town. However, I imagine those trees are heavily irrigated. If you've ever been to Paradise, I would just like to paint a picture, if you would.
Please.
It's a beautiful small community at about 1,800 feet up to 2,000 feet. And it's as you get into town, you hit that elevation where ponderosa pines can absolutely thrive. It's beautiful. Being in a pine forest, it's like Lake Tahoe. It's a retirement community. There are many older people, many retired people there. We just heard that the latest estimate is 15,000 structures lost. Butte County's population is 230,000. That's we're talking about 15, roughly about 15% of the county is now homeless, if that's true. And that is an absolutely tremendous blow. I think it's just unimaginable. It's not a particularly prosperous county. There's not a ton of industry here, and the folks that lost everything, have already retired. And I my heart really goes out to everyone. The descriptions, the photographs, it is block after block of absolute devastation on a scale of Redding. I was out talking to folks at the evacuation shelters yesterday as they were spending 4 or 5 hours to get the 10 miles between Paradise and Chico. Folks were absolutely shell-shocked. And just either didn't want to talk. I lent my phone to people to try and reconnect some elderly folks who were rescued from a convalescent home on a county bus and try to get them in touch with their relatives to let them know that they're okay. It is just absolutely, it's difficult to imagine. We've covered these kinds of things before, and of course it's different when it's in your own personal backyard. There's been a lot of focus on social media, and I have to tell you, there's so much misinformation that's causing people absolute panic. We've heard all sorts of reports that certain historic landmarks have been destroyed, that the fire is here, the fire is there, and it's really not the case. I can tell you that the high schools, the high school, the elementary school, the hospital in Paradise were destroyed. And there's plenty of people in the valley spending a sleepless night last night.
Mark, I'm going to jump in here and talk about the emotional fatigue that's happening even for first responders right now. Even though this has only been going on for about 30 hours, the intensity of it, the people needing to be moved, and as you said, the incredible devastation. I know there was an effort to evacuate the hospital in Paradise yesterday, and people were met initially with a wall of flames, and a second attempt thankfully worked later on. But as you're describing it, even that level of vivid picture and pain isn't all of what we know yet, because this is so brand new and we've only had a couple hours of daylight.
Oh, yeah. There were lines at every gas station. There are gas stations running out of fuel. The traffic, you know, Chico is still at its heart a small town. Yes, it's grown quite a bit over the last 20 or 30 years, but it's still a small town at heart. Thankfully, you didn't see fist fights at gas stations. People are, helping one another out.
Hey, Mark,
yes.
I'm going to pause you because we're going to get an update now from Bob Moffitt, who is up at the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds. So I want to thank you for your information and tell you we may come back to you in the hour, okay?
Okay, Beth, it's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you so much. That's Mark Albert. He is the Morning Edition host at North State Public Radio in Chico. Now back to Cap Radio's Bob Moffitt. Bob, what's going on?
Hey, I didn't mean to cut off Mark, but I did want to chime in on a couple of things that he mentioned, and he's right on the money about a couple of them. But I know for a fact that some of the senior, he mentioned that the senior community, by and large, and that's certainly true. There's a high population there. A lot of the people in the nursing homes and facilities had to be evacuated,
as well as,
and they are in neighboring cities and towns. I know there's one in Gridley that for sure that has that's taken on eight people there, and also the just the idea of the topography of that area and how fast those winds were coming in. And he painted a beautiful picture of the Ponderosas, and I have family that lives there. And so when we've gone up there, I remember driving through that town saying, God, this is a beautiful place. I hate to think what would happen if a fire comes through here because it's just, it's choked. It's literally choked with trees, trees everywhere along the streets. I mean, the businesses are underneath and, he painted a really nice picture of what it was.
Well, Bob, I want to add to that as Mark Finan on KCRA's weather forecast reported, that Yarbo Gap near where the fire began had wind gusts up over 50 miles an hour yesterday. So the terrain and the topography of that Yarbo Highway 70 area was just so violent. I think violent is the best word for it. But Bob, I'm going to have you stand by for a moment because we're going to check in with Caltrans with so many road closures and issues with roads in the area. Thank you, Bob. And let's go to Raquel Borio with Caltrans. Hi, Raquel. Glad to have you with us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So what can you tell me about the emergency response and road closures in the area of this campfire?
Currently, we have Highway 70 closed westbound from Garden Drive, and that's in the Orville area, to the Highway 89 junction. So that's all the way up to Plymouth County. And then eastbound from Highway 89, we've got that closed down to the Highway 149 junction, and that's all the way down to the Orville area as well. So you cannot go up Highway 70 from Orville or down from Plymouth. And then as far as on Highway 99, we have northbound and southbound currently closed from Shippey Road to Southgate Avenue. And Highway 191, that's the road that goes straight up into Paradise from Highway 70, that is currently closed as well.
What are you advising for people in the area who are still on the move trying to get away from that area, Raquel?
So Caltrans actually has a quick map that we recommend that people download. You can get it on iTunes or Google Play, or you can just pull it up on your phone's browser, you know, preferably while you are not driving. But it will have up-to-date road closure information for this area.
You know, Raquel, we don't often talk to Caltrans in the midst of a fire emergency, but would you just quickly describe the role that the agency has in emergency response and dealing with the fleeing of people and the influx of emergency vehicles, the whole big picture?
So Caltrans works very closely with other emergency response agencies like California Highway Patrol, Butte County Sheriff's Office, just to ensure that if they need to make road closures so that people can get out quickly or safely, we are going to help enforce those, and we are going to be giving the public up-to-date information about different changes to road closures. You know, we want to make sure that we are doing the best that we can to give the public information that is going to benefit them, and also working closely with other emergency responders to help them evacuate this area, because it, you know, it's a very mountainous area. It's very beautiful up here, and it's not a ton of freeway connections like you would have in a larger city because it is such a rural area. So we work very closely with our other first responders to make sure that we are closing the areas that need to be closed for the safety of the public.
I'm looking at some information on a press release that says Camp Fire Quick Map. Quick Map all is one word. So that's the best place to direct people right now for information?
Yeah, so we update that. We work very closely with CHP as well. They let our dispatchers know what closures need to be put in place for safety, and we update that map, and then we also share that information with the public.
Raquel, thank you so much for the update. I appreciate that you were able to take a few minutes and get on the program with me today.
Thank you.
That is Raquel Borrio from Caltrans. We have one more update. I believe we have Jim Matthews standing by from the National Weather Service. Wind, of course, these warmer and dry conditions have been such huge factors in the starting of fires in the last day, both in Northern and Southern California. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
All right. So tell me about this shift in weather conditions, and how long are these winds going to stay lower as they are this morning?
Yes, we expect lighter winds today and into the day tomorrow on Saturday. However, Saturday evening and into Sunday morning, we expect another round of those dry, gusty north-to-northeast winds to develop over Northern California, and that'll result in more critical fire weather conditions. We do have a fire weather watch for Saturday evening into Monday morning at this time. And we are closely looking at our weather charts and deciding what to do.
One more question. Are you part of, I'm trying to grasp this network of communication that happens. You've just given a forecast like that. And I know Cal Fire has its own meteorologists, but is there a good cross-agency communication now saying, okay, we could have another big wind event on Saturday. We're going to staff up and stand by and change our resources. Is that networking happening in a way that involves you as well?
Oh, yes, it is. We have a couple of forecasters right now down at the Emergency Operations Center in Sacramento coordinating with all agencies that are involved in response and Highway Patrol, Caltrans. It's a close knit group of people that are working very hard to get the best information we can to the public and, of course, to the decision makers.
All right, Jim, thanks to you, too, for a couple minutes of your time. I appreciate the weather update.
Oh, you're welcome, and our hearts and prayers go out to the people in paradise.
All of ours do as well. Thank you, Jim. That is Jim Matthews with the National Weather Service. On the phone now from the CHP is spokesperson Officer Seha. He is with the Valley Division. Hello, Officer Seha. Thanks for a few minutes of your time.
Hello, and good morning.
So Caltrans talked about the quick map. the quick map that can guide people through and around the area. What do you want to add to that? And you do have this cross traffic situation with people going in and emergency responders coming in and out and around. Give me the lay of the land from your view.
Well, the thing that we want people to understand is that it's very unsafe for them to be, you know, trying to cross or trying to go through the closures. We are there for a purpose, and we urge them to please listen to the law enforcement that is on scene, because we're there for their safety. And as far as road closures go, right now we do have State Route 191 closed at the junction of State Route 70. We also have State Route 32 closed at Yosemite Drive in Chico. We also have State Route 70 from the 191 at Pence Road, just north of the junction of 89 and Greenville Way. And we have State Route 99 still closed from State Route 149 at the junction to Southgate Avenue in Chico. We do have word that the fire is now 70,000 acres, has burned through 70,000 acres, and is approximately 5% contained at the moment.
As you look at the rest of the day today and you're shaping your plans, I know this is a bit of forward talking, but what areas are you looking at for possible additional closures, say over the next 6 to 8 hours?
Well, right now we are in collaboration with Caltrans and Cal Fire, and as well as all the other agencies there, and we just got to kind of put our heads together and figure out what our next course of action is as far as road closures go. But right now it's uncertain.
Okay. Any place that you want to direct people for additional information besides that Caltrans quick map?
Right now, that would be the best resource to go through it, because it's constantly being updated. So it's constantly telling people, you know, where they can and cannot go through. That would be the best course of action right now.
All right. Officer Seha, again, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
And that was a CHP spokesperson with the Valley Division. Let's go back to Bob Moffitt quickly. Bob, I just want to revisit the evacuation situation. I know you were headed for the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds in Chico. Is that kind of ground zero for everybody to gravitate to?
Well, this is definitely where the command center is, the headquarters for all the firefighters. There have been a number of evacuation centers that have been set up across Butte County. As the fire expanded, then some of those moved. Some are even into Gridley and in Chico. I believe one of the ones in Chico was actually full to capacity last I checked. I haven't seen much in the way of evacuees or people who live up in Paradise here. This is mostly the command center for vehicles, firefighting, and other equipment.
All right. I said this earlier that the Butte County website is down. Many phone lines are down. Your cell phone service seems to be just fine from up there at the moment, but people are being directed to social media for communication. Anything to add to that, Bob?
This fire's wiped out a lot of landscape, and there's going to be some communication problems that come with that. Fortunately, the Cal Fire comes with Wi-Fi and comes with communications abilities that you know, people in other areas don't have. Just to talk about infrastructure, one thing I didn't mention earlier was, as I was driving up, there are I believe at least six power lines that run through the area that's been burned by the fire, and I've seen multiple PG&E trucks out and about, including one. Not sure if it's babysitting the line or what it's doing, but it was hanging around Highway 99 as one of the power lines was leaning to the south, and there was a truck underneath, and I think they were bringing in a crew to shore that up. So
I'll just add, Bob, that I was in communication this morning by emails with PG&E. We were hoping to get a spokesperson. And then just before we went on the air, we were told that there's so much focus on emergency response right now, supporting customers, first responders, and the communities, that there wasn't an opportunity for a conversation. But of course, with this wind event coming up over the last couple days, thousands of people were on standby for their power being shut down as a preventative measure. So it doesn't surprise me, of course, you would see PG&E presence throughout the area.
Yeah, it's a typical when they have an incident like this that they send, they start sending crews out as soon as they can because they are able to work usually from the outside in order to restore service, which sometimes helps the first responders sometimes, and then for people that are whose homes were not affected, then they can return sooner. But with the area and with the containment being as minimal as it is, it's going to be a little bit. For that to happen, I did want to give you just a brief weather, just a feel of what the difference was too of the weather this morning compared to what it was yesterday. It's significantly colder. In the upper 30s to lower 40s up here, and the wind is barely moving. Yesterday, it was cool, but it wasn't as cold as it is this morning, and the winds were howling. So it's definitely been an improvement in 24 hours compared to what it was yesterday.
All right, Bob, thanks so much for your reports on the ground there. We're going to take a short break and continue with the wildfire coverage on Insight. You are listening to Insight on CAP Radio. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. The California Office of Emergency Services has been holding a news breaking, but if you've been listening to Insight this hour, you've heard extremely updated information from a number of the key sources and agencies and reporters involved in the Camp Fire, which has ripped southwest across Butte County, scorching more than 70,000 acres. And the Morning Edition host in Chico at North State Public Radio said there is the word that maybe as many as 15,000 structures have burned, that the town has been torched. A note from Bob Moffat, everything burned except the Taco Bell there. Right now, Ezra Romero is in the studio. And Ezra, you've been monitoring, among other things, some of the stories of evacuees.
Yeah, I did speak with Scott McClain with CAL FIRE, and to his point, is that he said about more than 80% of that town is destroyed, a paradise. And so they won't have exact numbers for days and days.
All right, so let's talk about some of the people that were on the move yesterday morning at this time and then on through the night.
Yeah, Sharon Ginger Rich, she said she was first alerted to the blaze by a neighbor screaming, "Fire, fire." She said they got out in a hurry, but she said it was pretty hairy. Let's hear from her.
It was pretty hairy. We came down the Skyway. It took about an hour to get from our house to the top of the Skyway. And both sides of the road were in flames. I thought we were dead. We kept going.
It was tough.
We kept going. And
you
could feel the heat. And we'd seen people walking.
I think what we get in the pauses there, Ezra, is that there just aren't words. How can you describe that kind of an experience, really?
Yeah, and she was talking about this four-lane highway that's a main access route into the area, and that's where the reporter in Chico spoke to them at. They were watching the area burn. Another resident, Paradise resident Nate Rodriguez, he fled on foot with his housemate's two pit bulls, and it was a scurry to get out of there.
I woke up, and I thought it was a sunset, honestly. Or a sunrise, and then I got a bunch of calls about a fire, and I live right on Pence, and there's a school right behind there. They were evacuating all the students. There's flames up from behind the school, and I panicked. My roommate's not here. These are dogs. I was waving down people, just anyone on the road to come help me, because I didn't have a car or nothing. And I managed to find one way. I got dropped off behind a gas station. And then another dude was speeding through the bike trail, but he stopped. He came and got me, got the dogs. He got us to Chico. And, this is one of the most terrifying things I've ever been through. I'm happy my mom's okay. I'm happy the dogs are okay. And I'm just really trying to find a place for these dogs.
And so Turtle Royce, he uses a wheelchair. And he got evacuated as well, and he was stuck in gridlock traffic. And that's what I've seen on Twitter and Facebook a lot, is there's a lot of older people in these communities that have had trouble to get out. So let's hear from Turtle.
When we went through fire, there was fire on both sides of the road. Smoke was so bad that I could barely see the car in front of me. And we were going quite slow, but we made it through.
Ezra, while I've been in here in the studio, you've been monitoring and gleaning from social media and other sources. Is there more to add to the picture, to the story right now?
When I talked to CAL FIRE's representative, Scott McClain, he says, you know, that they have started doing the lines around Chico and that the fire is moving north, you know, and then that the red flag warning is over. But that doesn't mean much in California at the moment when at the drop of a hat, conditions could change and the fuels are so dry on the ground that the fire could grow big in there or spark somewhere else.
CAL FIRE is saying a 5% containment right now. I don't even know geographically what area is in containment, but the National Weather Service says that the wind event could kick up again Saturday evening into Sunday. So this is the critical time between now and Saturday night. How much progress, how much barrier can be set?
Exactly, and that's why they're trying to protect Chico. You know, it's a place with more people there, with a university and schools and businesses and things like that. They want to avoid what happened in Paradise.
I'm going to direct people to capradio.org when we're not on the air with updates. We are online with updates. We'll continue to provide you with whatever resources we can. Ezra, before I let you go, you spent the week covering politics in Nevada. Can I just get a quick update, a sense on the real shift from what was so much a purple state to a state that's looking like a different color, at least in its upper leadership right now?
Yeah, you know, the blue wave definitely crested in Nevada. And, you know, in more than a dozen competitive races, the silver state ballots broke for Democrats. You know, everything from the U.S. Senate race to the governor with Sisolak and things like that. So it just Democrats took over. But at the same time, you have a state that when you look on a map, looks mostly red.
Right.
And you have Washoe and Clark County that are blue, but that's where most of the voters are. Mm. And so there you sort of have these two different opinions in Nevada, when on the land side of things, it looks like there's more Republican voters. But when you actually see how many people have voted, it's a little bit of a different story.
I think that's a post-election story that's going to need a lot more attention. Today, we're pretty gripped by fire coverage. So thanks for doing dual duty today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That is Ezra Romero. We're going to take a break because the acting governor of California, who is also the governor-elect, is making decisions. We'll talk with Ben Adler about that in just a moment. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. More than 70,000 acres burned by the Camp Fire in Butte County. And we're hearing more than 15,000 structures burned. So much of the picture is being revealed with daylight today. The firefight continues. CAL FIRE reporting a 5% containment right now. In the studio with me is CAP Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, who spent most of the week in the last months of his life covering elections.
What life?
And now we've had two significant things for California this weekend. The tragic mass shooting in Thousand Oaks, the fires that are happening right now. And the person we're seeing speaking from the governor's office is Gavin Newsom. However, I really want to make it clear, Ben, that that's not because he was just elected as the next governor. He has a lieutenant governor's role that puts him in that position if the current governor, Jerry Brown, isn't in the state.
And Governor Brown left shortly after he spoke with reporters Wednesday morning. He flew out to Austin, Texas for an event at the LBJ Presidential Library. And I think he's supposed to come back today, but that has left Gavin Newsom making emergency declarations both for counties and also requesting federal aid from President Trump. So an early preview of what's to come with a Governor Newsom and a President Trump relationship. Will it be the same or different from a Governor Brown and President Trump relationship? We'll need to see. And then, of course, Newsom, who was preparing to make an announcement about his transition yesterday when he served meals to the homeless folks in San Francisco at St. Anthony's, ended up scrapping that planned announcement, did serve the meals, but then spoke about the shooting in Thousand Oaks. I think his comments would have been made anyway as governor-elect, and that's, you know, just the reflective of the two roles.
So let's listen to some of what Gavin Newsom said yesterday then about the Southern California shooting.
It's you know, a heavy heart. Come here a day or two after an election for governor, you ought to be focused on other things. 23 folks injured, and obviously 13 lives in total lost. And it's, you know, this is America. It's got to change. This doesn't happen anywhere else on planet Earth. And we can't let folks forget that. Can't lose sight of that. Can't allow this to be normalized.
So now, just to add a PS to that, there was this OES briefing this morning that I assume someone from the governor's office was there. We may yet hear from Gavin Newsom on the wildfires as acting governor. But then when Governor Brown comes back into the state, he'll step into that role as whatever wildfire event continues.
And Newsom made it clear, he reminded everyone there is one governor at a time, and that governor is Jerry Brown, as most president-elects and governor-elects say, only one governor and one president at a time.
I asked you a question during our election coverage that I think you were able to follow up on.
Or someone did for me, because I was not down in San Francisco yesterday, but our friends at KQED were able to share the audio with us. And you had wondered, will Gavin Newsom be moving into the governor's mansion? Let's remember that the governor-elect has several kids, different age ranges. So a reporter asked him, and his wife, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, was standing there alongside the governor-elect. Someone asked him yesterday, well, where are you going to live? And here's the answer.
For us, it's not about the two of us, it's about the four kids. And I got a two-year-old that just entered preschool and a nine-year-old that's got educational issues more like me when I was nine. You can read between the lines, who's really thriving right now. We've got a great principal, we've got a great teacher, we've got great teacher assistants, we've got a great after-school program, and that will drive any decision, is what works for them. They are the priorities.
That means he has a nine-year-old with dyslexia.
That would be the implication. Gavin Newsom has spoken in interviews, including our California's Next Governor interview, about growing up with dyslexia.
Severe dyslexia, he says.
As he called it, yeah. So reading between the lines, as the governor-elect said, that would seem to suggest his eldest daughter has dyslexia.
All right.
And so, to put a finer point on it, if she's doing well, would they want to uproot her from Marin County, where they live, and try to start fresh in Sacramento?
It's a critical conversation for a family. It's a very important decision for children and parents, in spite of having a very big job and leading the state. I think every family, every parent can understand that. I do want to wrap up any other updates that we have. Results have been rolling as ballots continue to be counting. Some of this is just a reflection of the gap between races. But what do we know today that we didn't know?
Well, late yesterday, we had updates from Orange County and some movement in a couple of races. None of the races have flipped, but Harley Ruta, the Democrat challenging Dan Rohrabacher, the longtime Republican congressman in the coastal part of Orange County, extended his lead. It's now up to about 3,000 votes. Katie Porter, the Democrat challenging Congresswoman Mimi Walters, the Republican who represents central and southern Orange County, basically cut Walters' 6,000-vote lead by a third, so it's about 4,000 now. Young Kim, the Republican seeking to replace retiring Republican Congressman Ed Royce, basically held her lead steady over Democratic challenger Gil Cisneros, so not much of a change there. So we will see as many more votes continue to be counted, and at last check yesterday, the state had said there was about 4.5 million votes statewide remaining to be counted, and that doesn't include some of that other counties haven't put in yet. And in Orange County alone, let's see here, that is about 420,000 ballots. So a lot left to go. We also have a state superintendent race that is unresolved and likely to remain unresolved for a couple of weeks.
All right, Ben, thanks for the update. Sorry it was so short today, but I appreciate it. That is Capital Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. There's more insight. Dr. Tillman Ruff is standing by for a few minutes with us. We'll be right back. Listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Dr. Tillman Ruff is the co-founder of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. His organization, ICAN, was awarded the 2017 Nobel Prize, the Peace Prize, for the role it played in getting the UN General Assembly to adopt a treaty prohibiting nuclear weapons. Dr. Tillman Ruff is on campus to speak to students at Sac State today. Had it been any other kind of day, Dr. Ruff, we would have definitely spent a very long period of time with you, but here we are in the midst of wildfires. Welcome and thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much, Beth. I'm grateful to be here. I really want to express my sympathy to the people that have been affected both by the terrible mass shooting a few days ago, but also the ferocity of and extent of these fires. This is not normal. This is a climate-stressed world, what we all face. Nobody is spared. Of course, when we think of climate disruption, we think about global warming. Most people don't understand that the greatest risk of acute climate disruption is actually from nuclear war. But I really want to express my sympathy for all of those that have lost their homes and especially those who have lost more in these difficult times.
I would like to look through the window into your mind after these midterm elections. Certainly there are bigger questions about the UN treaty. But considering the week it's been and all that's been said in American political leadership, what are you thinking right now?
I'm worried that by most objective assessments and the authoritative opinions of those who've managed nuclear weapons before, the dangers of nuclear weapons actually being used is growing. All of the nuclear-armed nations, the nine of them, are investing not just in retaining those weapons, but actually in modernizing them, in adding new capacities. All states are obliged, all countries are obliged legally to pursue and achieve nuclear disarmament. But not only are we seeing no real disarmament negotiations progressing, after decades, half a century since the Non-Proliferation Treaty entered into force, but we're seeing those really crucial constraints on nuclear weapons development, on the arms race, the legacy that helped to end the first Cold War, the INF Treaty, now in jeopardy. So these are difficult times. We don't have the luxury of time on our side to deal with this existential threat.
What's your view of the situation in North Korea, which President Trump has presented as so positive that he has suggested that there was a saving of the world from a potential nuclear incident?
Certainly the change that we've seen over the course of this year from really belligerent and explicit, quite irresponsible in my view, rhetoric on both sides, ratcheting up, you know, backing leaders into corners is not a healthy thing to do when they're both nuclear armed. So that the rapprochement, the dialogue that's happening is enormously welcome and needs to continue, needs to strengthen, needs to get bedded down as quickly as possible in durable binding agreements that will survive the vicissitudes and vagaries of the individuals involved. I'm very encouraged by the developments and particularly by the extraordinary leadership that I think President Moon in South Korea is providing to really make some major changes that are building people-to-people contact, economic links, continued dialogue between the North and the South. I think if this were left to the Koreans, they would have sorted this out a long time ago. So a long way to go, but very hopeful dialogues that need to continue and bear fruit.
We only have, unfortunately, about a minute left, but you're speaking to students on campus, and they didn't grow up with some of the experience that you and I have had in the conversation of nuclear weapons in the world. What's your message to young people?
My message is that this is an existential threat. It will be the end of nuclear weapons or the end of us. Those are our two options. We absolutely all need to take this personally and make sure that the answer to that question is the right one. And there's things that we can all do to make sure that that happens for everything that we love and hold dear.
Dr. Tilman Ruff, it was a privilege to have a few minutes of your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Beth.
I'm also going to take a picture of something beautiful that you brought with you. Do you want to quickly say what it is?
Well, I'm happy to share, because it was awarded to the whole campaign, the Nobel Peace Prize medal, the very beautiful Norwegian sculpted medal that was awarded to the campaign, which all of the people who care and have worked on this issue should feel a sense of ownership and pride and encouragement.
We will post a picture of that online. Thank you, Dr. Ruff.
Thank you.
Stay with CAP Radio online and on air through the day for continuing wildfire coverage. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thanks to everyone that helped make this hour so informative. And as everybody has expressed, our care, our hearts, and our gratitude to the first responders as the firefight in Butte County goes on. This is Insight on CAP Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.